Okay, well, we're back on the air, thank God. It's Monday, July 25th. We're in the 5th arrondissement of Paris. My name is Max, I'm here with Stacy. This is Le Fric Show. Oh, the Monday show is always so difficult. After 2 days of relative peace and quiet here, enjoying our luxurious lifestyle of cheese and baguettes and sex, we have to get back on these microphones and dish out reality frickin' by frickin' by frickin' second, each frickin' moment of the day, broken down for your frickin' amusement. But that's okay. We're compelled to do so. Not to do so would be irresponsible. So we want to live up to our responsibility and... did I just say irresponsibility?
You almost said irresponsibility, yes. That was a Freudian slip,
live up to
it?
Our irresponsibility. I live up to my inner demons. Now we're running the show.
Now they know the truth. We're just trying to convert them to Satanism or something.
Well, we had our Truth About Market show on Saturday. That was a good one.
That was a good one. If you were listening live out there on ResonanceFM.com. Otherwise, yeah. It's up on our podcast, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Where's the address on the podcast?
KarmaBankRadio.blogspot.com. Mm. And I actually put a little special treat of the... I took a clip of the Bob Geldof part, so you could send that around to friends.
Yeah, we had the Bob Geldof interview. And I think it proves many of the points we've been making over the past few weeks, that the celebrity shills for corporate capitalism don't really know what they're doing so much, but they do have a desire to sell lots of records and DVDs and T-shirts and other entertainment products because it's all entertainment. It's all good. They're trying to get Africans to star in reality-based TV shows and do an African version of Desperate Housewives, except with black chicks with big butts and, you know, carrying big, jars of water on their head, you know, walking around the neighborhood.
They like that?
Desperately looking for sex from the neighbors, gardeners. What's the premise of that show, Desperate Housewives?
Desperately seeking sex from anybody but your husband.
Yeah, they want to do an African version, so it's important that the American companies invade Africa. Replace the dictators that they installed 20, 30 years ago with the American media company moguls. Mm-hmm. Replace dictators with media moguls. That's the strategy. Of course, Bob Geldof is by the hind at 100% because he is a media mogul in waiting. He's trying to capitalize on his media assets as much as possible. And Africa is a reality show waiting to happen.
I liked the papers today, I think, where they were saying that London has undergone a huge transformation from the high of Live 8 3 weeks ago to... now the reality 3 weeks later after all these string of bombings and assassinations. Mm-hmm. Now it's funny to see that actually the two differences, like what did Live Aid achieve? What did anybody do on the street? Did they change or alter their behavior? No. And we see that after these London bombings, behavior has been radically altered, from bicycle sales skyrocketing. There's been at least a 30% drop in sales, in consumer traffic to Oxford Street and Regent Street and all the major shopping districts. So this is the sort of thing that Bob Geldof should have been trying to achieve.
Yeah, you make a good point. Geldof should have been promoting people to adopt bicycles and not take smelly and CO2 spewing cars in and out of London. And as a result of the bombs in London, as you point out, more bikes have been sold. Bike riding population is up sharply. So this is a positive. You know, this is something that's a positive development due to the London bombings. In other words, if the corporations and the governments refuse to take on climate change in a serious way, in a way that telegraphs to the community that they're concerned about the community, then if bombers come along and force the issue, force people to ride bicycles, then those people who were killed did not die in vain. You know, they died helping change behavior toward environment. So they're environmental heroes, the people who died in the buses and the people who died in the commuter trains. And these guys, the kamikaze guys of last week and the ones that will hit this week probably and next week, one, the silver lining is that ultimately they're doing the job of government in that they're trying to curb corporate abuse of the environment. And if it takes a few people, you know, that's the justification for Iraq, right? If they kill 25,000 Iraqis, it's worth it if they're putting in democracy.
Yeah, for the long term. They're thinking the long term. So the same thing these suicide bombers can argue. Yeah. Or as they call them in France, kamikazes.
The kamikazes. You know, yeah. it's worth it then, the long term, for the environment, for kamikazes to curb corporate abuse. And because the government won't curb corporate abuse, because the corporations have gotten into government. There's no separation anymore. And so we'll see what happens this week. Meanwhile, another terrorist news across the pond in America. Mm-hmm. 129 degrees in Phoenix and in other areas around Phoenix, in California, I should say. They had record heat wave in dozens of cities all across America, and lots of people dead due to corporate abuse, climate change, global warming, and the pursuit of profits by private corporations like Exxon at the expense of the public domain. But this is straightforward eco-terrorism as perpetrated by these companies.
Mm. Oh, the evangelicals must be like praising God. They love death and destruction, don't they?
Yeah, they love it. They think it brings the closer to them of the Savior from Jesus 2, the sequel, directed by Michael Bay. Will be coming, and starring Mel Gibson, will be coming to a theater in the evangelical neighborhood soon to show the redemptive powers of burning to death due to corporate-sponsored climate change and global warming.
Yeah, but this is a kind of, to me, looks like the real war on terror. You know, Americans think, oh, we're going to, you know, do shock and awe. Well, look what Mother Nature's doing to you. American terror, the war on American terror.
Yeah, this is shock and awe for sure, sponsored by Mother Nature. I remember that old TV commercial, you're probably before your time, Sweet Pea, where they had a commercial for margarine, and it said, nobody fools Mother Nature. And then Mother Nature is
this
vindictive, you know, bitch that stirs up a shitstorm that threatens planet Earth because she's been fooled into thinking that margarine was butter.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, we know from that ad how vindictive Mother Nature can be.
That's the only reason why we know.
Yeah. Imagine that times a million. You know?
No wonder that commercial's been banned. Bush doesn't want anybody to know.
Yeah, it shows Mother Nature. Shows the female, power of female. Imagine how heretical that would be to America right now, that women have power.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. You know, they'd have to, Dick Cheney would have to order up some new Abu Ghraib buggering videos from Iraq. Speaking of Dick Cheney, Abu Ghraib buggering videos.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union, they accused the government on Friday, that's the U.S. government, of putting another legal roadblock in the way of its bid to allow the public to see photographs and videos stemming from the Iraqi prisoner abuse scandal. So they put a legal roadblock up, the government has, in allowing these videos, which apparently show U.S. servicemen buggering little Muslim boys in the prison system, from getting into the public domain. Is it because, A, Dick Cheney wants these videos for his own personal amusement at home and he doesn't want to share them with other people?
That's a good possibility.
I mean, is that it? I mean, him, Dick Cheney, Rummy Bush are in the basement of the White House whacking off to these videos, and they feel it's, you know, their privilege. They bought and paid for these videos.
They own the copyright.
They own the copyright of these videos. They're afraid
Donald Rumsfeld directed it, maybe?
Yeah, Donald Rumsfeld is a frustrated director. You know, he's out there with his little beret and cigarette holder and what do they call those boards?
Clapboard.
You know, he's like, all right, action. And you got these U.S. servicemen holding down a poor Muslim boy, raping him anally with, flushing the crayon down the toilet in the background. This is the video that they've created for the White House amusement.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think Laura Bush and Cheney's wife are, you know, upset because the boys are down in the basement more than they maybe should be. With these videos.
Yeah.
But Cheney and Rummy and George have grown quite fond of each other. They've bonded over these videos.
Yeah.
You see, what's his name there? Rummy is walking with a bit of a gimp these days.
Yeah. He does. They all actually kind of walk with their legs wide apart.
Yeah. Well, Cheney especially. He seems particularly suffering the consequences of these particular videos that are hipping these guys into what it's like on the inside of a New York S&M bar.
So these Abu Ghraib videos are due to come out, and the government is trying to withhold them. They're trying to, the courts ordered them to release them, but they're not releasing them. But I can't wait to see. You know, Bush is the one that said, bring them on. Let's see what happens when these videos come out. Because, yeah, there are allegedly these videos show raping of young boys and some women.
Or maybe not, but I mean, they should post them because curiosity is, breeds all kinds of theories and thoughts out there in the public domain. And in a democracy, you would think that one of the goals is to be open and transparent mm-hmm. in what you're doing.
Yeah.
But U.S. has left planet democracy a while ago, so now we have these problems, these jihadists, these secret police, and these secret videos, and causing the inevitable and predictable results, which are the kamikaze pilots that have decided to take matters into their own hands and fight for their what are they fighting for?
Their freedom.
Their freedom.
Yeah.
They're fighting for their freedom.
Well, I think it was Seymour Hersh, the one who broke the Abu Ghraib scandal, who says that those videos actually show rapes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he saw them or knows, or his source actually saw them.
Yeah, I mean, with this Cheney character, I was reading in the New York Times today, the three Republicans, John McCain, Lindsey Graham, and John Warner, were pushing for this bill that would open up the government to some more accountability than maybe they wanted to be opened up to. Provisions to bar the military from hiding prisoners from the Red Cross, prohibit cruel and inhuman or degrading treatment of detainees, and use only interrogation techniques authorized in the Army Field Manual. But Cheney said no. He doesn't truck with that notion. So he's blocking this. He doesn't want the U.S. to in any way resemble a free and open or democratic society. So he got these three guys down into the basement, or I guess where they show the rape videos,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he strong-armed them and did whatever else he did with them. But they seem to be walking with a funny lilt when they came out of this meeting. Dick Cheney, he didn't get that name Dick for nothing, did he? So he gave these guys the big dick, and apparently they walked funny when they came out of this meeting. He had an unusual, this described in the New York Times, 30-minute private meeting on Capitol Hill on Thursday night?
Maybe.
They had a date?
Wow, that's pretty interesting.
Did he come with flowers first and chocolates and then the KY jelly? Cheney warned that these three senior Republican members of the Armed Services Committee, that their proposed legislation would, quote, interfere with the president's authority and ability to protect Americans against freedom and democracy and other civil rights that are protected in the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. The legislation, which is still being drafted, includes provisions to bar all these things that I just said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but this, of course, we saw this weekend the British police assassinated an innocent man.
Mm-hmm.
So who's to say these people aren't innocent that they're torturing all over the world? And, of course, John McCain, by the way, the one who was trying to introduce legislation against torturing, was tortured himself for 8 years by the Vietnamese.
Yeah, but the Vietnamese didn't use KY jelly. That's what made it torture. Americans do. That's what makes it American.
Kinder and gentler buggering.
It's a kinder and gentler buggering up the a-hole. That's mm-hmm. the U.S. way. According to the front page of the Herald Tribune, the Iraq insurgents are gathering strength.
But I thought Bush said we were winning.
Apparently that was a misstatement. The insurgency is gathering strength. At the same time, Americans acknowledge that they are no closer to understanding the inner workings of the insurgency or stemming the flow of foreign fighters who are believed to be conducting the vast majority of kamikaze attacks. Well, here we have the nightmare scenario gathering strength. As most people who had graduated from the fifth grade told the White House pre-invasion, the chances of strengthening those forces that they were hopefully fighting against was high. And without a good plan, actually, to go in there and just start bombing people and dropping depleted uranium without any plan whatsoever other than the plan of trying to sell Coke, Starbucks, and Microsoft products as quickly as possible and to steal the oil as quickly as possible might not work out. And so here we are. How long have they been in there? 2 years? 2.5 years? 2 years.
2 years. March 2003 they went in.
So after 2 years plus, it's becoming obvious that now that the U.S. is suffering from what has to be considered to be the biggest presidential gamble ever taken in the history of America, that you could simply roll the dice and try to do a leverage buyout with the help of an insider like Chalabi to take over a country, do an LBO of a country, and take control of their assets and pay for the acquisition using the revenues from the oil going forward. This is the Bush's. I can sympathize with him because this is exactly the plan I would do if I were president, to tell you the truth. Having grown up on Wall Street, having grown up during the period of derivatives and financial speculation, and having great kind of respect for Mike Milken and Drexel Burnham and the banking models that emerged during Bush's formative years when he was getting his MBA at Harvard.
Yeah.
This on paper makes sense. And if I were president, I would probably try something similar because it's an exciting prospect. You get huge fees.
Yeah, but of course you wouldn't have thought you could get away with it. You would have thought that the Constitution, the Congress, Senate, all those people were there to stop you from doing it.
Well, I mean, maybe. You know, the thing is that when you're a banker and you're getting high on your own supply, you know, you're living the life large based on the fees you're generating from this type of market manipulation. The arrogance level skyrockets and it blinds you to the reality of what's going on, and you become blindly arrogant, and you've got tons of money to work with. The Federal Reserve policy is keeping money cheap with artificially low interest rates. So you roll the dice. You take a gamble. And this is, if you read books, you know, this whole culture in America, the business culture of the past 20 years, with I think it started with Lee Iacocca's book about Chrysler, how he the rise of the celebrity CEO and the rise of books like In Search of Excellence and the whole marketing and business mentality that has totally overcome business, the consultants, the KPMGs, the all these different consulting groups have totally invaded the business culture and thus invaded the lobbying culture and thus invaded government. So government cannot act outside of the interests that are described very narrowly by the business interest. So it's ipso facto, you're going to have the government try an LBO of a country like this, and it looks great on paper, and therefore the results are not different than a lot of LBOs that go completely failed. Or a lot of these financial market manipulations that completely fail. You know, Enron was a market manipulation. The guys at Enron, on paper, they're MBAs, they're consultants. They figured out they put all the risk off the balance sheet. They keep all the reward on the balance sheet. And you get an $80 billion company that, if you do the true accounting, is worth nothing. Now, similarly, the Bush administration, and as I said, I sympathize with these guys because we grew up in the same mindset, the same era, the same period of American history, which is a period of great financial innovation. You can do an LBO of Iraq on paper, but like many LBOs, you know, it blows up in your face and fails. This is what's happening now. It's a failed LBO. Unfortunately,
because you discount the things that are going to get between you and your paycheck. Like Iraqi insurgents, like they're Iraqi people. You assume you because somebody might tell you, oh, they're going to resist, and then you think, oh no, I had already spent all that money, all my fees. I was dreaming about this great fee.
Well, I think it's just the ignorance of what the true risks are, and in the American business culture, risks are routinely mitigated through the use of additional financial products. Here, you've got the risk of killing Iraqis. I think the administration rightly calculated that nobody would care if America was killing tens of thousands of civilians. You know, people in America don't talk about this. They have no care about it. America has still got the mindset of the slave period, you know, where they would lynch people and hang them up and lynch them. And I mean, this is part of the American mindset. They're deeply racist. Let's be honest about it. And so the fact that these are not white people that America's killing factors into America's forgiveness of the administration for killing these people. They're not white, are they? So Americans say, well, they're not important. That's an American trait. It's an American reality. But what they failed to calculate on was the what they say in business is the exogenous risk. This is a risk that exists outside of any computer model. And that is this kamikaze, the strength of the kamikaze. Because, you know, businessmen, as you use a business metaphor, fail to take into consideration the celebrity factor as it relates to the kamikaze attacker.
Yeah.
In other words, these kamikaze attackers in London and elsewhere in the world are basically celebrity seeking. And it's not so much that they are buying into a corrupt ideology that they're going to, you know, go to some heaven with virgins waiting for them. It's that they understand quite well that their names and faces will live on in perpetuity on the internet as having been heroes in this community, especially if this insurgency, the global insurgency, really, this 10th crusade that's emerging, if the Arab side wins, then these guys who the kamikaze bombers this will be revered for hundreds of years if the Arab side
thousands maybe
if they win.
Yeah.
Now there's no reason to believe at this point that the Arab side won't win, because right now, based on this front page New York Times article, they state quite clearly that the Arabs and the Muslims are, as far as the 10th crusade is concerned, right now, they're winning.
Well, they're winning at a time when not only is China seemingly going to stop financing America, but also America is having problems recruiting soldiers, where the Iraqis, you know, there have been something like 500 suicide bombings. You would have thought, you know, it would be hard to recruit anybody at this point. Mm-hmm. But they seem to have a never-ending supply.
They've got great marketing. I mean, there's no shortage of people willing to buy SUVs, even though they know it's killing them. They're suicide consumers because of great marketing. Marketing, the same consultants that advise Enron, that advise Drexel Burnham, KPMG, the same group of guys who create this marketing role for suicide consumers and suicide bombers. They market it. They do a great job marketing. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, there's no shortage of kamikaze in this 10th Crusade battle, because they're being fed visions of heroic proportions, as is always the case in war. The funny thing is that this war never had to happen. It was purely started as a whim, as a gamble.
But Bush, Bin Laden, and Blair wanted it.
They felt antsy to establish themselves, because they're thinking that it could be, you know, there'd be a win for them in 2 or 3 years, and that their fees that they could generate on the lecture circuit would go up dramatically.
Bin Laden on the lecture circuit. I would pay to go see him talk, wouldn't you?
Well, he is emerging as the Che Guevara of our times.
Of course he will.
In the next 5 years, 10 years, people will have him on their T-shirt. Every kid in the world will be got the Bin Laden poster in their dorm room, and he'll be seen as the guy who took down the corporate killers. It's, you know, in America, the corporations are coming under increased attacks from people who are choosing not to consume, either because they realize it's killing themselves, or because their real estate properties are going negative equity and they don't have the cash to consume, and they just don't have the wherewithal to consume. So the corporations are on the defensive. And if the corporations buckle and fold and the environment wins, as it would in that scenario, then it's not difficult to draw a line between that and the kamikaze bombers and say, well, they were part of the victory of the environment over the corporations. They were the hit squad that were employed to do what had to be done to curb corporate power because the governments were incapable of doing so because they had been corrupted by the corporations. And this is when bin Laden will emerge as a hero of the youth in 10 to 15 years. Kids and white kids in America will have his poster on the wall of their dorm room at Harvard and Princeton and Yale.
Of course they will, because, you know, we weren't alive then, but Che Guevara was as hated in America and as vilified as bin Laden now is.
It's a funny economic situation because a lot of people think that the luxury goods business is problematic for a number of ways. Certainly, the animal rights activists are not too keen on the way the luxury good business uses fur. And they've been fighting against the luxury goods businesses for a while. The luxury goods business is a very high margin business, in large part because these goods are bought by the criminal element in our society, which are hedge fund operators and money launderers. And they're supported, that group is supported by the banks. And all of these groups enjoy 30%+ return on equity year over year. So anytime a company, an organization, or a criminal organization is getting 30% plus on their money, they tend to support each other. It's a bit of a cartel in that way. And the perfume business is set to get the calculation of the inner dynamics of what that's all about, because one of these kamikaze guys in London bought more than $2,000 worth of this designer perfume, and to create his napalm style ingredient for the incendiary device that he used.
It's just it's quite truly the closure of that. The symbology is great.
Yeah. So the luxury good, which the economics of it is killing the environment. Okay, the flip side is that it's now being used to attack those who are supporting those corporations, not placidly, but passively.
Yeah.
The passive support. You know, people are saying that the people in London are very stoic in the face of this terror, but they're passive. They're not stoic. They're passive. They refuse to take some action that's needed to stop the transformation of themselves into cannon fodder in this bin Laden, Bush, Blair oligopoly, really. This sharing of power around the world. And so whenever I see this article, this story, and you know the T-shirts they have in London that say, I'm not afraid? No? Do you see these T-shirts?
No, but yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah. So they have the Underground logo?
Yeah.
And instead of, like, it says Ipswich or whatever, it says, I'm not afraid?
Yeah, right. That's why, apparently, the Underground is, like, almost empty, even at rush hour. it's like hollow gestures. It's like Live 8. Yeah, they should probably have a Live 8 logo on the back, too. I care.
Yeah, well,
because I went to Live 8.
I'm a passive bonehead, I think would be a better logo. Because they're not doing anything to stop the root cause of their own destruction.
Yeah.
Why? What you see, human beings, if they were in a natural setting, they would do something to stop their own destruction. That's what nature kind of favors, this self-defense mentality. And you see it in nature all the time. In plants, you know, the porcupine has big spikes because it's concerned about its survival, you know?
Yeah. But the Brits are like sheep.
The Brits are just sheep.
Yeah.
They just wander from celebrity reality show to reality show, you know, aimlessly, you know, bang, and they're getting slaughtered. And they're not doing anything about it to save themselves, which the thing that they should be doing is, number one, removing power from corporations like Tesco. Tesco's killing Britons. Ryanair is killing them. Yeah, there's obvious companies that are killing Britons. Coca-Cola, operating in Britain, is killing, they're killing people there. Starbucks is very detrimental to the long-term survivability of the British people. But they don't do anything about it. They just bleat like sheep.
They're sheep. Well, you know, this is the, you always talk about America and their corporations buggering people. Donald Rumsfeld leading the way. But a few years ago, and you have to look this up because it's true, in Britain, this this man was caught buggering a sheep. And the judge in the case actually went to court. And the judge, you know, he was released. They didn't charge him with anything. Ultimately, he wasn't found guilty of anything. And the judge, in his summation, said the sheep didn't seem to mind being buggered.
Right. So you could say the same thing about the British population.
Yeah.
You could say
sheep don't notice.
Yeah. So the kamikaze strike at the bomb or the subway, and the judge can say, well, the Londoners don't seem to mind.
Yeah. Because there was a lot of people witnessed this act, and apparently the sheep just kept eating.
Yeah.
Just looking down and eating.
Well, so do the British people keep consuming.
Yeah, they look down and drink their beer.
They look down, they drink their Coke, they consume, they buy their SUV. They're continuing to consume. Kind of connected to what we're talking about right now is the story in the New York Times talking about how the soldiers in Iraq are concerned because the American public says that they support what they're doing in Iraq, but they're not really making any kind of sacrifices.
No, that would remember Bush only wants a faith-based community. They don't want reality.
Yeah, well, here the headline is, all is quiet on the home front, and some soldiers ask why. The Bush administration's rallying cry that America is a nation at war is increasingly ringing hollow to the men and women in uniform who argue in frustration that America is not a nation at war, but a nation with only its military at war.
Of course. Of course. That's the truth. This is it.
There's no serious talk of a draft to share the burden of fighting across the broad citizenry, and neither Republicans nor Democrats are pressing for a tax increase to force Americans to cover the $5 billion a month in costs from Iraq, Afghanistan, and new counterterrorism missions.
Well, it just shows it. Well, the corporations don't want that, do they?
Well,
it's a corporate. It's a leveraged buyout.
I think the feeling is that if you're a soldier and you go to Iraq and you get killed, it's your fault. You know, mm-hmm. First of all, a lot of them are mercenaries. They're mm-hmm. professional soldiers, mm-hmm. and that's their job. You know, I mean, if you are in, a job that's highly dangerous, you take on that job as mm-hmm. a professional mm-hmm. mercenary, you get killed. Well, you know, that's your job, isn't it?
Yeah. In fact, the only time Americans cared was, of course, when in Fallujah, the Fallujans killed those four mercenaries. They weren't even U.S. soldiers. They were mercenaries. These were guys who went over there to kill for money.
Mm-hmm.
It's so bizarre that's what Americans cared about. They don't care about all these U.S. soldiers being blown up.
No.
Four Black Hawk or Black Creek, whatever that company was that had the mercenaries. The Black Sheep.
Yeah, well, the soldiers, I think, need to understand that they're just, you know,
cannon
sheep.
Fodder.
They're cannon fodder. You know, mm-hmm. they're in order for your compatriots back home to consume more, you're giving your life. You're giving your life for them to consume. You're not giving your life for their freedom because they've already exchanged their freedom mm-hmm. to the corporations. They've already said, we don't want freedom. We want you to be more invasive. We want to give up all of our privacy. We want to give up all of our civil rights because we want you to give us cheap oil and cheap interest rates. And we're willing to give it all up.
But they don't want to pay for it.
As long as it's cheap.
Exactly.
And that's why life is cheap. So these soldiers are dying, but they're dying on the cheap. Mm. If every time a soldier died, the prices of commodities and interest rates would go up, then Americans would give a shit. But since that's not the case, they don't. So these soldiers, if they think that they're fighting in the name of nobility or moral considerations or ethical considerations in any way,
somebody's going to have to pay because there is a cost involved, and it's the big debt building and building and building, and that's due to these, you know, war on expensive goods.
Yeah, the debts are building, of course, and they're building in two ways. They're building ecologically because ecology is becoming burdened with the consequences of this behavior. So you've got now the hurricanes and the global warming and the climate change that are destroying the habitat in which we live. So that debt's, you know, Mother Nature's collecting that debt.
Yeah, we see that clearly.
And financially, you know, with China buying U.S. corporations or attempting to buy U.S. corporations with all the dollars they've accumulated servicing American debt, then that debt's coming due in that way. So it's not like the debt's going to go away.
No.
And Americans, you know, they love to just kind of sit in their bubble and pretend like everything's going to be okay. And they rely on people like Jeffrey Katzenberg, who's a movie producer over at DreamWorks, to serve up delightful delusions and cartoons for them to sit back and live in their denial bubbles. But now even Jeffrey Katzenberg, master of Hollywood, is having difficulties. As it's turned out that his operating abilities at DreamWorks, while the company is a public company, are coming under increased scrutiny by regulators and shareholders who believe that maybe this guy is acting more like a market manipulator than somebody who's operating as a reliable fiduciary.
Oh, really? So what's happening? So he's the one involved with this whole DreamWorks thing. It looks like it's coming down to him.
Well, yeah. It looks like he overestimated sales of Shrek 2 DVDs and Madagascar.
Overestimated or lied?
Well, I mean, this is what has to be investigated. This has to be determined. Because if, in fact, there was insider stock sales that were connected to these overestimations, then he lied with, you know, purpose. You know, he was market manipulating, as the other DreamWorks crew were in on the scam. And, you know, the thing about DreamWorks is that one of their jobs is to create the myths around which America can continue to live in denial.
So we
just saw that movie War of the Worlds, which is trying to create a mythologize you know, the war on terror. You know, the characters are saying, are those the terrorists, Daddy? You know, and a lot of the imagery is borrowed from 9/11. And a lot of the imagery is also borrowed from Spielberg's movie Schindler's List, where the good guys are fighting the Nazis. And so I think, you know, Spielberg's trying to say that, you know, it's a conflicted world out there, but we're good and they're bad, and we triumph in the end because we've got a positive virus. Our virus is good and their virus is bad. You know, it's very good and evil. There's no nuances. There's no diplomacy. There's no dialogue. It's just good viruses versus bad viruses. It's good versus evil. It's, you know, either you're with us or against us.
Yeah.
It's a bipolar world coming from a bipolar director who suffers from bipolar disorder, you know, as does Hollywood.
Well, funny enough, that is, by the way, viruses, how Americans own America now. That's how they kill the American Indian. Do you think he was trying to say that? Like, haha, we beat the American Indians with smallpox.
Yeah.
We could do the same to, maybe he was calling for biological war.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point. Maybe Katzenberg and Spielberg and DreamWorks should come up with a bio war against, come up with a, because they've got now these, through gene therapy, you know, they just isolated a gene for a drug that works on African-Americans and Africans better, or it's very effective.
Yeah.
So they've discovered a certain gene therapy, and GM therapy works in different races differently.
Yeah.
So maybe what Spielberg is asking covertly in this film is that America should focus on developing a virus that attacks Muslims, and that this way it would get rid of the kamikazes.
It worked for the American Indian.
It works in all colonial situations, doesn't it?
Whatever it worked in Latin America. That's how the Spaniards took over Latin America.
Where the white people go, disease follows.
They wiped out the Aztecs literally overnight because of disease.
Well, Hollywood, of course, always coming up with ways to reshape reality and then charge us for our own experiences. For example, you remember Hill Street Blues, that TV show?
Yeah.
Stephen Bochco, I think that's his name.
Yeah, yeah.
He's now shooting a new TV show that takes place in Iraq right now.
It's amazing how short that timeline has become. Remember, it took like 20 years after Vietnam before movies started coming out about it. And now it's just like everything is a reality TV show.
Yeah, well, MASH was how many years after the...
30 years, maybe?
Yeah, then Vietnam, as you say, it's a compressed timeline.
Yes.
But now, you know, there'll be a lot of Americans who their entire perception of the conflict will be based on this TV show.
Exactly. They'll just think it's a TV show. And this is what children will grow up. They'll have a memory of it as a TV show. So they won't realize that it was actual war and people actually died. They'll say, no, it was just a TV show. People don't really die in TV shows.
So when they get the draft notices, they'll think it's a casting call.
That's the trick.
Yeah. They'll say, you'll get a message from Steven Bosco. Yeah, he'll say, congratulations, you've been asked to star in a new TV show called Iraqi People Getting Killed by an American that's slaughtering each other. And you're like, wow, I'm going to Hollywood. They do extraordinary rendition because once you get on the plane and go to Hollywood, they can take you to any city in the world.
And you won't know.
And that's right.
And
you'll be extraordinarily rendered to Iraq. They put a gun in your hands.
Yeah.
You stand up and say, look, there's what's his name? They got some rapper on this thing. Kirk Sticky Fingers Jones. Okay. Look, there's Finger Jones over there. You know, there's your gun. Shoot him. And they get the camera.
That's a brilliant idea, actually. It's like the U.S. Army hires these people to come in every once in a while. Look, there's Puff Daddy. There's 50 Cent. And they'll be like, oh, I'm in a movie. And of course, if you get blown up, you know, it's too late.
Well, you remember in Apocalypse Now, they have a scene of Francis Ford Coppola's in the rice paddy with his camera. And he's saying, move along, move along, move along.
Oh, yeah.
And the soldiers and Martin Sheen's looking at him like, wow, what am I, in a movie?
Yeah.
You know, wow, where's reality in all this? Is this real? You know? And, you know, I think this was telegraphing the situation we're in now, which is that it's not so much cameraman taping the movie so much as the movie is informing the cameraman, conforming the Hollywood establishment.
So I just think they're mimicking Osama bin Laden, because he's the one that engineered this in the first place. He got all these people, you know, all these young Muslim kids to come out there and take part in his video blogs.
Mm-hmm.
Take part in my vlog.
Yeah, well, they staged the second tower attacks to get the media attention.
Yeah.
So Stephen Bochco is saying, you know, all the deaths in Iraq so far, how many Americans are dead?
1,800. It's hard to say because they lie about the numbers, don't they?
And plus, they don't count those who they put on a plane and they die in Germany like 5 hours later.
Exactly.
They're not considered to be dead in Iraq.
No.
If you add those numbers,
yeah.
I think it's actually American deaths are like 20,000.
Mm-hmm.
If you add the people who actually died just after clearing Iraqi airspace.
Yeah, that's why they keep them alive no matter what, all sorts of machines, and then put them up in the air. Okay.
Once they're out of airspace, they pull the plug because they can't afford it anymore. And they go, oh, he didn't die in Iraq. He died in some other conflict somewhere else in a virtual parallel reality produced by Stephen Bochco. So Stephen Bochco, he's got this new series coming out. The Iraqis are treated in early episodes as a backdrop to the dramas facing U.S. soldiers.
Mm-hmm. God, that's really shocking. Who would have thought?
Now, if I were a Muslim reading this, and I was not radicalized yet, this would radicalize me.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be radicalized reading that Stephen Bochco is using my fellow Iraqis as a backdrop for some cheap TV show in America. That's pretty radical to me. Rarely accorded a name, they are often hooded or masked, and they fall and die as the twists of the plot dictate. It says in the New York Times.
Really?
Then it goes on to say that Bochco will not give his views of the conflict. Quote, the moment you take a political position, you are providing answers, not questions, he said. I just like people to ask questions. Like, yeah, where is the residuals going for this nightmare? You know, the fact that he's monetizing American deaths into his own pocket. Yeah, how about where the money's going? You know, how about sharing that money with the people who you're facilitating their deaths? He's radicalizing people to go to Iraq and kill more Americans to get on TV show.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is the reality of it.
Yeah.
So where are these people getting compensated for this, Stephen Bochco? The action in Iraq intersects with the lives of wives and soldiers. Uh-oh, wives. It's going to be like
the
housewives
desperate
having sex
housewives
at home. Desperate Iraqi housewives at home.
You know you're going to have one fall in love with an Iraqi beheader.
Yeah, like that guy who shot the postman so he could go to jail and get 3 square meals a day.
Uh-huh,
he's
going
to be shooting the wife of the Iraqi soldier in jail. And then he'll have like a webcam in prison watching him survive as a prisoner on some farm sponsored by Tesco and Walmart. Watching the very movie and see his wife in Iraq getting buggered by U.S. servicemen.
How crazy.
Stephen Bochco. That'll be episode 7.
Don't give him any more ideas.
Yeah, but I could write this show in a heartbeat. It's easy to write. All you have to do is say, okay, America, well, how can we facilitate its decline? You know, think about ways to facilitate its obliteration. Let's see, what else? Michelle Joyner of the National Military Family Association, who has not yet seen this new show called Over There, said she was apprehensive. One of the greatest sources of support for military families is the civilians who stand up and say, "We understand your sacrifice." Is it going to raise awareness of what we're going through, or is it going to cause stress for those who have a loved one serving in Iraq? Well, she's missing the point on two sides of the argument. You know, it's not about empathy for the soldiers, because obviously if it was, they'd be given proper equipment to defend themselves, which they're not. They give them like pea shooters and a piece of cardboard and say, "Here, go jump in this mosh pit of terrorism and see how you survive." You know, only the good will survive. So he doesn't understand that these guys are just cannon fodder, number one. And number two, no, as if somebody in America could care. You know, it doesn't matter if you have these guys dressed up as Jesus. You know, nobody in America cares.
They just have contempt for soldiers. You know, if these guys, you know, were true Americans, they would be mercenaries instead.
Yeah.
They would be enlisting with Bechtel, Halliburton, Casey, Titan, all these people.
Well, that's one big flaming Hollywood nightmare. Speaking of the news stories today, Monday, July 25th. This is La Frick Show. My name is Max. I'm here with Stacy. We're broadcasting to you from the 5th arrondissement of Paris, France. Paris, that has not been put on the list of targets by the enemies of American corporate jihadists.
So we'll be here for the next few years until this war is
finally decided. Yeah, well, we're a movable feast, aren't we?
We are.
We're not far from where Hemingway wrote that book.
Exactly. We're actually one street away.
I don't give too specific coordinates, please.
There are loads of streets that go off that place.
Yeah, but, you know, it's perilous times.
Speaking of feast, I see your story next involves agriculture and food.
Yes, it does. But I wanted to touch on this movable feast thing a little bit. And that, what are the cities that are on the hit list? Italy, right? Rome,
yeah. Copenhagen, and right. Amsterdam.
So these are in the crosshairs
yep.
of those fighting against corporate occupation.
Yep. I think that the first two are going to be, it's going to be either Copenhagen or Amsterdam. Because, you know, Italy is quite a militaristic society anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they like to have those dramatic effects, so the arbitrage between reality and fantasy of the fantasy of Northern European life, which is very open and liberal. Mm-hmm. You know, so once Al Qaeda shows up, I think the drop is further, the terror is greater than in somewhere like Italy.
Yeah, I think you got a good point there, a good basis for making a spread bet.
Mm-hmm. You know? And Italy's used to mafia killings all the time.
So if you had to make a spread bet on which city gets hit next, you'd say Northern Europe versus not Italy.
Yeah, it's probably Amsterdam, I would have to say.
I was reading in the Times today that one of the brothers of the victims of the kamikazes from last week mm-hmm. said he was totally in shock when he heard about it, and he was on the phone making a spread bet. That was the quote. That was the direct quote. I have to find it here in my stack of newspapers.
No, he was not on the phone.
He said he was making a spread bet when he heard about it. He didn't say he was making a spread bet about that event.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I'm serious.
I know you always talk about spread betters.
Well, there's on here. I'll find it. Maybe, you know.
Well, we'll have to look for it. We'll have this story tomorrow. We'll follow up with that tomorrow.
Yeah.
But that's pretty shocking, considering that you always talk about the spread bettings that happened on that day.
I think it was in the Guardian newspaper. We're going to find it. But let's move on to a big story here, because you've got politicians waging wars to boost their corporate sponsors. And by the way, I think this is ultimately the best solution to replace the word neoliberal business model with corporate occupation.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good. That's a good one.
Yeah, we've been looking for a replacement for neoliberalism. Because it's too academic, too jargony.
Yeah, but never use their words as well, because that's their power.
Mm. And so I think corporate occupation is what the kamikaze bombers are fighting against, in my view. They're against mm-hmm. corporate occupation. And I sympathize with their view. I'm not pro-violence. but I sympathize with their view. They're anti-corporate occupation.
Mm-hmm.
You can make that line, and I sympathize with what they're doing. 9/11 was, again, I sympathize with what happened there. Those people are fighting against corporate occupation. I sympathize with that line. That's why they're not poor kids in the ghetto who are throwing, you know, Molotov cocktails. These are educated guys who are doing planned, coordinated attacks against corporate occupation.
Yeah, well, you have to be smart to understand that you're being occupied by corporations.
Exactly.
You know, and most Americans don't. I mean, you know, that's one of the most uneducated continents on Earth.
The illiteracy rate's very high. Yeah. 27% of adult Americans can't read.
Well, even the ones that can read, you know, they don't understand. There's a difference between knowledge, you know, understanding, and all that stuff.
So let's move on. We're saying that there's the corporate occupation and the wars that it's resulting. Then, so those are human beings. And then in the animal kingdom, you've got the animal rights activists that are fighting against Pfizer and these other pharmaceutical corporate powers that are trying, you know, to do all this maiming and vivisection to boost shareholder profits needlessly. I mean, they treat the animals the way American military treats the Iraqis.
Yeah.
You know, they're cannon fodder. They're just disposable life.
Mm-hmm.
So then you've got the humans, and then you've got the animal kingdom, and then you also have the plant kingdom. The plant kingdom is being, you know, abused in a similar manner as our fellow human species and our the animal kingdom as well. And it comes in the form of genetically modified crops, is abuse of the plant kingdom, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And genetically modified seeds are an attempt by a corporation, principally Monsanto, to turn plants into an easily manipulated currency.
Yep.
So if you can patent the seeds and you own those patents, and then you transform those seeds in a way that they don't reproduce, you have to buy new seeds or unique seeds every year, and then you manipulate the markets in such a way as you destroy biodiversity. You've then created a new currency controlled by a new bank, which is Monsanto principally, to sell back to humans what should have been rightfully theirs from the beginning, which is access to food. And they're pretty far along in the scheme.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, the environmentalists of the world, like the Greenpeace and Friends of the Earth, they attack Monsanto and genetically modified crops on the basis that these things are maybe not safe to eat relative to other competing products. But they don't attack it on the economics.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's a huge oversight on their part. But, you know, we've talked about that before. And what I want to talk about right now is just something here in the newspaper, which shows, you know, the progression now of the takeover of the plant kingdom by corporate occupiers. Because what's happened is that these genetically modified crops, the seeds have blown into the conjoining crops, and they've mixed, and they've created mutants, and they've created weeds now that are immune to any kind of
pesticide
or weedicide, weed killer.
I mean, are you even allowed to pull the weeds up if Monsanto theoretically owns it?
Well, that's another point, of course, because remember in Canada, the seeds blew into, the GM seeds blew into a neighbor's farm, and he unknowingly grew plants with the GM seed stock, and then Monsanto sued him and won for having stolen the seeds.
But Monsanto, by the way, said several times publicly that there was no way pesticide-resistant superweeds would develop from their technology.
Well, according to today, there's a race of superweeds that has been created due to genetically modified crop and irresponsible corporate behavior due to the corporate occupation of the plant kingdom. The discovery that herbicide-resistant genes have transferred to farm weeds from GM crops is the second blow to the hopes of biotech companies to introduce their crops in Britain. as if they will be stopped.
They're not going to be stopped. Tony Blair is going to use his popularity because he was a firm leader when the bombers went off. Like, who's going to be a weak leader? Do you think any leader is going to run away? You know,
in Iraq, in their constitution under Bremer, not the constitution, but their articles of incorporation.
Yeah.
You know, it says right there that they're not allowed to use their own seeds. They can only use corporate seeds.
They have to use Monsanto seeds.
Yeah. So they introduced in their crops following farm-scale trials that were already scientific evidence that herbicide-tolerant oilseed and GM sugar beet were bad for biodiversity because the herbicide used to kill the weeds around the crops wiped out more wildlife than with conventionally grown crops. Now this new research, as follow-up to the original trial, shows that a second undesirable potential result is a race of superweeds. So this is eugenics, really. Eugenics in the plant kingdom.
Yeah,
you know, these are the supermen, the perfect killers. Blue-eyed, white-skinned killing machines killing the biodiversity, killing the...
killing ugly fruits and vegetables
killing
and
the ugly,
plants.
Ugly, the Jews of the plant kingdom are being murdered by Monsanto's killer seeds.
Yeah.
Now, where are the Jews to defend the plant kingdom?
Where exactly.
You know, they've had this experience already. How come they don't stand up against Monsanto? Yeah. Monsanto is applying eugenics and wholesale slaughter of a race of people because they're ugly. To plants. They're getting rid of biodiversity. Now, where are the defenders of the plant kingdom, especially those who have had the exact same thing happen to them in the 1940s? Where are the defenders of these plants? Well, so far they haven't stepped forward. Farmers the world over are always troubled by what they call volunteer crop plants, which grow from seeds built from the previous harvest, of which oiled seed rape is probably the greatest offender. Anyone familiar with the British countryside or even the verges of motorways will recognize thousands of oiled seed rape plants. Why do they call them rape plants?
I think that's the name of the vegetable.
You know? Why do you think they call it rape? Well, somebody's raping somebody.
Somebody's raping somebody.
I think
and it looks
Monsanto.
Like Monsanto's getting away with it.
He's getting away with the rape. So
the problem is, you know, they created this giant market. You know, 85% of Americans have had genetically modified food. But it's something like 95% of Americans have no idea that they've had genetically modified food. And they in this survey, it was like 95% of Americans would want to know if there was genetically modified food in what they were eating. But clearly, they've already eaten it, and they don't even realize it. So, you know, that's the problem with these, you know, human-consuming machines that just put anything in their mouth. If it looks like food, it must be food. So you can shape, you know, piles of dog poo, and it looks like a burger, and they'll eat it, and they just won't notice. So, you know, they put anything in their mouth.
Pretty much.
They do.
Pretty much, yeah. They'll put anything in their mouth. They'll eat anything.
But then by consuming anything like that, it gives corporations like Monsanto huge amounts of power because you're giving them all your money for you don't even know that you've been eating their products because you're putting anything in your mouth.
Yeah. Well, in France, you can differentiate between 250 types of cheese. And, if you know, a French child can differentiate, you know, 30 different types of cheeses. And I saw a film on this recently. It's kind of interesting. They teach this type of aesthetic to young French children to be able to differentiate between different senses and flavors and to have an aesthetic orientation toward life. And in America, of course, there's just cheddar, processed, yellow
Velveeta
cheese slice number 47 with some dye.
Yeah, they just change the color of it. They have the dark orange one or the light yellow.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's the only difference. It's the same exact ingredients. Mm. The only thing that's different is the dye color.
So when your culture can't differentiate and has zero aesthetics at all, it's easy to just serve up pre-processed poo on a bun, and they'll eat it. They'll eat anything.
So it's easy to be occupied by corporations because you don't know any better anyway. You just don't see the difference.
No, they don't see any. They don't. As long as the interest rates are cheap and the gas is cheap, they'll eat anything.
There's no quality whatsoever.
No, absolutely not. Meanwhile, the Chinese people that are making all of the cheap goods, they're getting a little bit more aggressive here. According to this recent study on BBC News, America is being infiltrated with fresh-faced Chinese students that are actually spies. Some are engaged in research at respected foreign establishments, while others are enrolled as bright young business trainees in major Western companies. Their mission? To use fair means, or foul, to gain technological and commercial intelligence that will help speed China on its way to becoming the global superpower.
Your master.
Mm-hmm. They own all everyone's debt already, so, you know. Police in Sweden also suspect Chinese guest researchers of stealing unpublished and unpatented research from an institute there, according to the Swedish radio Ekot's website. Chen Yonglin, a Chinese diplomat who recently defected in Australia, claimed Beijing had as many as 1,000 spies in Australia alone. Wow. Mr. Chen, a former first secretary of the Chinese Consulate General in Sydney, told the BBC News website that the lawyers had told him to say no more for fear of jeopardizing his chances of receiving political asylum. And he's also afraid that the Chinese people who own the mortgage on his house would come and kill him. Because remember?
He's Chinese and he knows how terrifying they are.
They have no voting in China. You know, there's no universal suffrage, is there?
No.
It's capitalism with no voting. It's forced consumption, as we talk about on this show. Because mm-hmm. the insiders, they figured out they could make more money with forced consumption than they could make with forced labor.
Yeah. Well, I read something this weekend where they were saying, you know, China ruled the world. They were the dominant power for 2,000 years. They were the leader of everything, technology, culture, blah, blah, blah. And then in the 1500s, they had some psycho leader, kind of like a George Bush sort of character, who became insular and insane, and they stopped developing. But I think they're kind of like, you know, the Muslims in that way, is they want back their former glory. Everything ended for them in the 1500s.
Yeah, that's right. They're coming back. They want to restore their glory. The caliphate.
For the Muslims.
For the Muslims,
and
they want to restore.
And the Ming Dynasty for the Chinese.
The Indians are coming back. You know, the Indians were big for a while. You know, now they're coming back. And what are the U.S. doing? They got their thumb up their ass. They're about to become not the second biggest super, you know, power. They're going to be like number 9,
they
number 10.
They have their thumb up their butt because they're so constipated from eating all those Krispy Kreme donuts and down in Coca-Cola.
Well, I laugh because I'm short the U.S. dollar. And I'm buying gold. So the worse the situation gets in America, the more money I make. So, you know.
And therefore, the more money I make.
And therefore, the more money I give to Stacey. Stacey, I'm the Manchurian boyfriend. She just controls my mind with secret keywords like lunch. Speaking of lunch, I hear the bells ringing. Soon lunch will come.
Soon lunch will come. And it won't be genetically modified.
I hope not. And then after this afternoon, we're going to strip naked and rub camembert on all over our bodies and create a nice souffle.
You know I don't like camembert, though.
Okay, well then we're going to use Gruyere. We have 250 cheeses to choose from, honey. You don't need camembert. This is not a monoculture. We got choice in this culture. You pick any cheese you want. And tomorrow we're going to find that story about the spread-bedding terrorist bomber. And we've got a lot more news to cover, including hopefully Thomas L. Friedman will write another stupid column that we can rip apart in real time. Until then, this is The Frick Show saying bye, y'all.